This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird Cultian Ford. Bird Cultian Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365 radio host and team reporter, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, director of broadcasting, also team and recruiting reporter. Joined as always behind the scenes by Jack McKenzie and also Armstrong Sims. And we got a full show for you this week as we've got a schedule to talk about. We've got players coming and going to talk about, some guys declaring for the draft, some guys announcing they'll be back at Baylor, and some guys announcing their commitments to Baylor as well. And we've got some basketball to talk about at the same time. So very busy. Men, the number one team in the country. Women coming off of a COVID break in hoops and football, just trying to start putting together the pieces for 2022 now. So, Grayson, before we dive into all of the headlines, how are we doing this week?
Yeah, really entertaining week, and one that actually had a lot more impact than I think many people thought there would. A ton of decisions being made, commitments being made. I mean, this was a really entertaining week. Lots of basketball going on. Of course, the men continue to roll, but they got a big challenge tonight, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, a good week and an entertaining week, honestly, covering this Baylor football program and basketball program.
So football season has come to a close. Georgia wins the national championship. They beat Alabama on Monday night, and that was a bit of a surprise because, you know, Alabama is who they are, and they were up early in that game and looked like they'd probably be able to hold on to the lead but lose some receivers to injury. That's really been a big blow for them, you know, over the stretch run. And last night that was certainly the case as well. But, I mean, Georgia's defense, phenomenal, and they get the W and, you know, big plays there at the end to blow it open and make it look like a much different game than it actually was. I mean, as far as the score goes, it was not a two-score Georgia game until the very end. But, yeah, Georgia wins their first title since 1980. That's longer than any of us in this room have been alive, the last time Georgia won a national championship. And so football season is now, you know, for the big boys officially closed, and it's on to recruiting and everything else that comes with the buildup to spring football.
Yeah, and I mean, this is why I hate rematches, because, like, Bama was so much more dominant when they beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, but they're going home without a national championship. And, you know, I mean, I get it. These were the two best teams in the nation, and I understand that. But it's also just one of those things where how many times does the team that lost the first matchup come back and win the second matchup? I just feel like it's pretty common. But yeah, you know, kudos to Georgia finally getting the monkey off their back. They've had their issues with Bama in big games. They finally were able to get a huge win, and really they impressed me a ton. Their red zone defense was just terrific. I mean, they were bending some to that Bama offense, but they just weren't breaking. And that was the difference in the game. And then Stetson Bennett had a couple of really nice throws late in the game that allowed Georgia to win. But I think it was a fun close to the season. I thought it was a really entertaining game. Both teams played well, and both teams really showed what they were the whole year. You know, they had great defensive moments, great offensive moments, and overall, I thought it was a pretty solid national championship game.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out to be. It wasn't the most fun game, I think, you know, the first half, but that was, you know, a game that I saw a lot of people complaining during the Sugar Bowl who were not fans of Baylor Ole Miss, like, oh, these two teams can't play offense and blah, you know, that kind of deal. And then I'm like, well, then watching last night, I'm like, well, this isn't that different. It's two defenses that are just not letting the other offense do much. And, you know, then eventually there at the end, Georgia's defense just completely took over and made the plays to win the game.
Well, thank the Lord for the first half, because I bet on the under in this game, and it barely covered because the second half went crazy. But it was like 9-6 at halftime, and I was like, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness that these two teams couldn't score in the red zone.
Yeah, no doubt. So for you gamblers out there, no more college football to bet on, I guess, until next year. But getting to Baylor next year, all the pieces starting to be put together for what should be a fun ride defending their Big 12 championship. But starting off with the news, let's start off with the schedule itself. Louisiana Tech announcing this morning that their game with Baylor next year is off, and that instead of playing the Bears, it was a part of a three-game series. The entire series is over. They're not going to continue it, and they are instead, Louisiana Tech, going to now play Missouri out of the SEC. I'm not sure what's going on here. I'm not sure whose move this was. I mean, it sounds like it was La Tech's, considering that they've already lined up their replacement, and it's Missouri. I don't think that's a better opponent than Baylor. I guess the only thing you could look at would be the SEC thing, but I don't think even most people know Missouri's an SEC school. I mean, seriously. Yeah, we'll have to get some more insight from Mac Rhodes on what exactly is going on here, because it's not often that you see two D1 schools have a game canceled 10 months out, or less than 10 months out from when they're scheduled to play, more like 8 months out. And that leaves Baylor in a little bit of a lurch, I would think, as far as replacing that game. And, you know, thankfully they have BYU on the schedule, so it's not as though they would only have, like, directional schools. But that BYU-La Tech 1-2 punch was pretty good. And now, instead of facing Sonny Cumbie for a second time in less than a year, since he takes over there and Rustin is head coach, they'll be playing question mark. We have no idea. So we'll have to talk to Mac Rhodes to get more insight, but no longer going to be playing La Tech next year.
Yeah, I'm so curious about this. This never happens. I feel like it's super rare.
It happens
rare.
Sometimes, but not often.
So we're sitting here, and now it's all about, okay, is someone else canceling? That's what I'm looking for. Is someone else kind of crazy going to get a game canceled as well to start the year, and then Baylor replaces their schedule with them? But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going on. It'll be very, very interesting to hear what Mac Rhodes said. But I do think it's interesting that Baylor could go out and maybe schedule someone really, really good to start the season. I think that would be really entertaining. Don't know if that'll happen, though. That requires one of these decisions to happen, on the other hand, to another school. So, I think it'll be interesting. I think Baylor can probably supplement that first matchup with a better matchup. But Louisiana Tech was always going to be a challenge, and they do have a road matchup against BYU. So you might want just like a tune-up game to start the year, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, that's their very first game. It's supposed to be at McLean Stadium on September 3rd, and now not the case. So La Tech off the schedule, future matchup off the schedule as a part of that series. That whole series is in the trash can now. And Louisiana Tech, as I mentioned, will instead play Missouri, and Baylor will play to be determined. So we'll, again, get more insight on that from Mac Rhodes when we have an opportunity to talk to him next. So right now, open date to open the year, and then BYU on the road, and then Texas State at home, and that is your non-conference schedule. So missing a team, and we'll need to add one. And, yeah, I have no idea who would even be available at this point. That would be I mean, certainly not up to Louisiana Tech's status. But, I don't know. I'm sure there's phone calls being made right now.
I see tweets like North Dakota State, North Dakota State or James Madison, because I think those two are transitioning. But I'm just like,
I'd rather avoid that.
It's such a guessing game, right, to see who they could replace on the schedule, because there's so many moving parts still. So maybe Matt can provide some clarity. I kind of doubt it, but maybe. It's been, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Well, 2 hours, yeah.
A couple hours, but I'm sure he's made some phone calls in that time period. So yeah, that's a weird, unexpected update, but we will keep you updated on Sikkim 365 Radio and Sikkim365.com as they try to find the replacement opponent, and we'll have Max interviewing all that up later on this evening once he's wrapped up with us on the show. Meanwhile, in player news, roster news, a handful of players have announced that they'll be coming back to Baylor next year, and this was all massive news. Kind of almost looked like it was planned, the way it's been released slowly, like day by day. Another player announces that they're coming back next year, and today that was the case once again. But the big news to know right off the bat is, as of last week, basically Baylor's entire O-line's coming back next season. We knew they had the opportunity to. Xavier Newman-Johnson does move on. He's out of eligibility and had to go at this point, but he is the only starter they will be losing on the O-line, as Jacob Gall, Khalil Keith, Grant Miller, and Connor Galvin all announced they will be returning to Baylor for another year, bonus years here because of COVID and all of that come into play. And so that is Baylor's gain, having that opportunity to bring all these guys back. And so we do know that Blake Shapin's got to get healthy in the offseason, and you've got to replace Abram Smith and Tristan Ebner, and you've got to find some new receivers, although I don't think you're you're replacing Tyquan Thornton and RJ Snead to an extent, but you know the one answer you do have is on the O-line. So you've got Miller and Galvin and Keith and Gall all back, and that leaves one spot really for the taking on that offensive line. I know people have already debated, you know, Gavin Byers, does he fit in there? Does he redshirt? I mean, how does this all work? That can all be figured out. The big news is just that these four guys are coming back. That's obviously huge.
Yeah, it is. It's really big for this team, and I think it actually provides some versatility for this unit as well. I mean, Khalil Keith was great at right tackle this year, but I could also see him play guard, and I could see Baylor go out and maybe add a right tackle. Again, I think a priority, in my opinion, we talked about this on the show last week, was, you know, I would like it if Gavin could get his redshirt year back. I think it would be great for his development. I think he could really use it. But, you know, we'll see. They might have to play him if he's the best guy available. Obviously, Micah Mascua will also have a say in that guard race, too. But, you know, right now, it's a lot of moving parts. If Baylor finds a tackle in the transfer portal that they really like, they could supplement the offensive line and bring in a right tackle and then put Khalil Keith at guard and really shore up that starting unit, which is going to be really good. And I think after seeing these guys return, it's very clear that Baylor's going to have the best offensive line in the league. Baylor's going to be able to run the ball again like they were able to run the ball this year. And yes, they have people to replace on the offensive side at skill positions. But I think if you look at their depth chart, I think really the areas that you have to focus on are the offense line, defensive line. Are they going to be able to dominate in the trenches like they did this year? And the answer to that is going to be yes.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, I wouldn't expect drop off next year with these guys all coming back. And the thing is at least to my knowledge, Baylor didn't have to pay $200,000 for them like they do in Austin. They didn't have to, you know, pony, hey, if you come back, we'll give you $50,000. No, a winning culture. You like playing for a guy and you see the progress that you made and you want to come back and do it again. And I think that's why certain teams are winning titles and other teams are trying to pay to win titles. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you. And that's good news that Baylor's going to have all of these guys back, and it's, you know, based on their posts that they made and whatnot, they love playing for Eric Mateos and they just want to be back and do it some more. So I think maybe an offensive line, especially for guys who could have gone on, these guys finally had fun last year, and they're like, hey, let's do this some more, rather than, probably the way they felt prior to this year, where they were probably ready to leave as soon as possible, you know, in some cases, and I just think that speaks to the culture. So that's a big deal that all four of those guys will be coming back, and the offense will start with them next year, and then, you know, fill in the weapons around them and whatever that looks like. But you got a really good starting point, that's for sure, with those four and your O-line intact. So those were four announcements. There was also the announcement along the defensive line. Cole Maxwell announces he's coming back, and our own Colt Barber also reporting that Chidi Obanaya will be back. So two defensive linemen also announcing their return. Siaki Ika will be back next year. Bray Nutley will be back next year. Who else are we
looking at? Gabe Hall, TJ Franklin.
Gabe Hall needs to get healthy, but yes, he'll be back next year. TJ Franklin. So you should have your starting D-line back next year. So your two lines, really looking at only missing one O-lineman as far as starters go. But other than that, your O-line and D-line both are all coming back.
Yeah, you have your starting two deep on the defensive line coming back. I think there's a chance Baylor might take a transfer as well up front. I know they're kind of in the thick of it for Jackson Player, the Tulsa transfer. They're still in it for him. And so, they're looking to add even more depth there. But, man, this is a great place to start. And this is what I'm talking about. This year they won in the trenches on the offensive line and defensive line. They're going to be able to do that again. I mean, they're bringing back all this experience, all these guys who have played a lot of snaps and guys who really showed this year how good they can be in the right system, in the right situation. I just think they're only going to get better and better now up front, and they're going to give their young guys a lot of time to develop and mature, which is huge. It means more than just the starters on the field. It allows you to get those younger guys developing instead of throwing them on the field before they're ready. It's massive, and it's something that's really, really speaks to what Dave Rand is building, and it allows you to not have to focus on the portal to really make up for all the spots that you're missing because they're pretty loaded.
And Cole Maxwell in particular really had a big year. I mean, he ended up making a lot of plays for this team and was finally healthy and could actually factor in. I don't remember calling, you know, Chidi as much, but, you know, in terms of like, oh, there's Ogbonnaya, you know, as much as I feel like I did with Cole Maxwell or with some of the other guys. But obviously he's been around the block for a while now. And, yeah, just having all that experience and having grown men back is a big deal. So a big deal all the way around on your lines in terms of the news over the last week. And it wasn't just done there. Christian Morgan had at one point tweeted a message that he'll be back. Now, the weird thing is that now if I go look for the tweet, it's deleted. And I don't know what that means because I saw some of the coaches celebrating his message last week. So I don't know if he, like, didn't get a graphic and wants to redo it because everybody else has a graphic that clearly somebody made. They're all the same. And he didn't have it like that. He just, like, typed, can't wait to run it back with my brothers, and that was it. Everybody else has, like, this official graphic with their quote on it. So I don't know if, like, he deleted it so he could do it officially or what. But it did look last week like Christian Morgan will be on his way back, and that would just make sense, honestly, especially for really for both sides because Baylor needs safeties, and Christian Morgan's not going to the NFL and, you know, going to go play for 10 years right now with the way he would be entering. So I think that just makes sense for both sides, but I don't know. Maybe, again, there's an official graphic coming for that, but that tweet is deleted. But, again, the coaches responded to it, so we'll see. But elsewhere, a player who does have an official graphic and it's up and everything else, Isaac Power also announcing that he will be coming back next year. Ace punter, flipped the field for Baylor so many times this year. He was a real weapon for them, and he is going to be coming back, and I think that's huge news because he could get better, and it's scary to think that he could get better, but he can. And, you know, just some of the pieces, you know, you usually look at quarterback or running back or wide receiver, you know, all the flashy positions, but they're loading up on returnees on the lines and now in special teams as well. Obviously, there'll be a change with Matthew Pallage, no longer at Baylor, moving on to Oregon, who was their special teams coach. But I would expect that they'll still place a great deal of emphasis on it, and especially when you got a guy like Isaac Power coming back.
Yeah, and I mean, Power flipped the field so many times for this team. He's one of the best punters in the nation. That gives Baylor a true weapon at that position. And I will say, I got a lot of questions asking, you know, what's Baylor going to do at punter? They hadn't offered anyone. They didn't take anyone in the class. It was kind of up in the air, and now it makes a whole lot of sense why they didn't really focus on it. It seemed like Power, I guess, was going to be back in the fold. And to get him back, just like I said, gives them a weapon in special teams. They return their punter and the kicker with Isaiah Hankins coming back as well, coming back for his sophomore year. So, yeah, they're very loaded there. And again, I mean, the depth of this team and the quality that they have and the returning veterans that they're bringing back, I mean, they're going to be very, very good next year, probably better than this year's team in some areas and in some ways. And now they just got to put it all on the field. And honestly, when I'm watching or looking at all these preseason polls and it's having Baylor at, you know, 24 or 16, I'm just so confused on what people are watching and what they're looking at because, I mean, Baylor to return this much talent, I mean, I just don't see how you can name 15 teams ahead of them at this point.
Well, the same people that picked them eighth in the preseason poll, I guess, this year. And, you know, it's just not a school that people immediately think of, I guess, even at this point, even winning the Sugar Bowl, even beating Ole Miss. I'm sure Ole Miss is high, though, even if they lost Matt Corral.
They're below Baylor in the ESPN one where they're ranked 16th. I think Ole Miss is 24. Yeah, but then you got some other, like NC State was inside the top 10.
Carolina was the top 10 to start the year last year. That was a real good call by everybody out there. That was a really accurate.
ACC football.
Yeah. Gotta love it. Boy, all we talked about this year was the ACC and the Pac-12 and just quality of football that those coastal conferences play. Ooh. But, yeah, I mean, they'll shake out just like they did this year. Now we're just awaiting the final polls and to see whether or not Baylor's going to finish top five, which
fifth
they should.
Fifth in the AP.
They're officially fifth
in the AP, but the college football playoff one is obviously the one that everyone's intrigued by. I think they're probably going to finish top five. They should.
I would think so, but the top five AP is still all-time best mark. Yes. Never have finished top five before, and I hadn't seen that yet. So with last night's game wrapping up the season. Those will be coming out. And yeah, with that number five finish in the AP, that's Baylor's first ever top five finish in the polls. And obviously we'll be in the college football playoff as well when that comes out, those final rankings.
Yeah, they finished 12 votes ahead of Ohio State for the fifth spot.
Oh, wow.
And they're 90 votes behind Cincy for the fourth spot. According to the AP, this was released actually this morning.
I think they beat Cincy, but that's okay.
I do too.
Yeah, that's all right, though.
I think Ohio State beat Cincy. I think Oklahoma State beat Cincy.
I think a lot of teams that are behind them would beat them, but it is what it is. And, Baylor with a top five finish. So that's something else that you can put on the marquee for this year and, you know, put in the program for next year.
Yeah, three Big 12 teams inside the top 10, Oklahoma State at 7 and OU at 10. So, I mean, really, really impressive. And BYU finished at 19, who Baylor also beat.
What was Texas, 24? They sneak them in there.
They actually didn't get
votes.
They're
doing the preseason poll.
But what I do love is San Diego State at 25 at 137 votes. At 115 votes, Texas A&M outside the top 25.
If only they would have played that bowl game, they would have gotten more love, I guess.
Losing to Wake.
Well, it was a great year, no doubt. And so just very cool to see them finish top five. I mean, that's, you know, kind of something that's probably just mentioned more in passing and not really focused on. That's a big accomplishment. I mean, to be one of the five best teams left standing, they'd never been that before in the eyes of pollsters. And so just a year full of history, no doubt. So there's that going on. You got the roster shakeup. You've also got some new commits that are in the fold. The class of 2023 starting to take shape. Now up to a handful of commits, or just over a handful at six. And that's because two more players have joined the fold as of this week. Over the last few days, a couple of safeties joining the fray, and they certainly need safeties. I mean, we talked about Christian Morgan coming back, it looks like. But we know JT Woods will be gone to the NFL. And then besides that, you really have young guys. You've got your Devin Neals and guys like that, but not a whole lot proven back there, and certainly not a whole lot of depth at safety right now. But, you know, how does Lorando Johnson factor in? Does he replace Jalen Petrie? You know, there's some question marks. And on one of these commitment videos, one of the coaches posted the actual phone call to Dave Aranda, and you can hear Aranda tell this player that, you know, you can play early. And I know a lot of coaches say that, but when you look at the Baylor safety position, I think he really means it. Like, you could probably, it's too bad you're a year younger than you are, because you could come in like now and probably compete for some playing time. But the two players that have pulled the trigger, let's start off with San Antonio Brennan safety Tyler Turner, 6 foot 180. He is committed now to the Bears. Tyler Turner, what can you tell us?
Yeah, this is a great pickup. This is, I mean, he was the top safety on their board for a long time. And I mean, I just heard so many great things about him. Talking to him, I've gotten to know him pretty well. Really good kid. I've been waiting on him to commit to Baylor for a while now. It just seemed like it was going to happen eventually. And it ended up happening. And the 2-1-0 connection continues. He talked a lot about JT Woods and Ben Sims throughout the season to me, just kind of mentioning, oh, they continue to make a good impact. They're from San Antonio. And obviously, JT Woods playing safety, that's really intriguing, I think, to Turner as well. I don't think he'll play the same position as JT. I think he's going to be more the strong safety, which is more what Christian Morgan played this year. He doesn't quite have that same long speed that JT Woods did, but he's plenty fast enough, plenty quick enough to play kind of the star or, like I said, the strong safety position. Hit 133 tackles this year, 5 for loss, 4 forced fumbles, and 3 interceptions. This guy forces turnovers, makes plays, is highly productive, has been highly productive each of the last two seasons, was 6A first team all district player. I think he's one of the top probably two or three players in the entire city of San Antonio. The only one that he's probably behind is because the guy's a five-star defensive lineman in Johnny Bowen. So, I mean, he's one of the best players in the area, and he's been the guy that Baylor targeted really early. They offered, they get him. I couldn't say any better things about him. I think he's going to be a phenomenal addition to this class. I think he's probably, I think he's one of the best safeties in the state, to be honest. I think he's that good. And I know people have questions about his speed and his size, but I think he's a little bit bigger than 6 foot 180. I'm probably going to talk to him in a couple days, so I'll get a more accurate probably reading of where he's at now, because those posts are probably from months ago. And then also his speed. I think that's the other area that people have concerns.
So Tyler Turner in the fold had offers from Tech and SMU, UTSA, Rice, amongst others. So he's getting a lot of love from the home state. He commits out of San Antonio, Brennan, and he would also be joined by a second safety commit this week as Corey Huff Jr. from Aldine Nimitz High School down in Houston, also 6'1", 180. He makes the pledge to the Bears. I actually think that was the commitment where we saw the phone call, right?
And that was the first one.
Yeah, to Dave Aranda. Yeah. And he had offers from, or has offers from, Colorado and Navy and SMU, amongst others. But he commits to the Bears. And what can you tell us about Corey Huff Jr.?
Yeah, another guy who came to Baylor quite a few times, really liked Baylor, grew a great relationship with the staff. He's about 6'1", 180. I think he's going to be in the mold of a Jalen Petrie. He's being recruited to play nickel, which is star in the Baylor defense. So I think he fits perfectly. Made a lot of plays, very physical, tackles really well. The one thing I'd like to see more of is creating turnovers. He doesn't have a ton of that on film, which is something that obviously Jalen Petrie really excelled at. And watching the star position develop under Dave Aranda, it's very clear that at the star position, you're going to have a lot of opportunities to create turnovers. And so I do think they need someone that can create turnovers. So hopefully we see that on next year's film for Corey. But if you watch him, he's always around the ball. And that's something that Petrie did so well in his time at Baylor. Just always around the ball, physical, makes tackles, can help in the run, can play a little bit of coverage if need be, especially covering slot receivers. So yeah, another really good addition, fits the scheme perfectly, which I think is the biggest thing about Corey that stands out, is just how you watch him and you go, I can see this translating to the Baylor defense. I can see Jalen Petrie in his game. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I could say about Corey.
So Corey Huff Jr. of Aldine Nimitz in Houston and Tyler Turner of Brennan High School in San Antonio. They joined Justin DeLeon, offensive lineman, quarterback Austin Novosad, tight end Hawkins Polly, and athlete Jakeevian Rogers out of Dangerfield as Baylor's six commits so far for 2023. So you'd figure at least one third of the way through, and then depending on how close they get to that 20 mark, and then ultimately go over to, you know, anywhere between 20 and 25, basically, that's your ballpark you're playing in. So they're a little over a third or the fourth of the way through with the class at this point with six commits.
Yeah, and it's huge that they added two more commits, because Baylor has their junior day coming up at the end of January. And so this is a great opportunity for all these commits to show up and really be able to recruit other guys at the end of the month. I think there's going to be a lot more of momentum in the 2023 class heading towards the end of the month. I think they'll probably get a commit or two on junior day, maybe a couple leading up to that. We'll see if guys commit before junior day, but that's going to be a huge visit, because that really sets the stage for, is this going to be a top 25 recruiting class? You have to figure out a way on junior day to make that an experience unlike any other, and also just continue to build those relationships. I know Baylor's getting closer and closer to filling out their recruiting staff, which they obviously have to do some rearranging there, and hopefully by the time January 30th rolls around, they're able to kind of have a solidified recruiting staff, make it really organized, and make it a really successful event. It's very, very important and probably underrated in the whole recruiting process.
And, you know, not everybody's on the board to catch, and even if you are on there regular, you can still miss stuff. But can you kind of explain in the best way you can just kind of what you mean by reshaping the recruiting staff?
Yeah, so I know Dave Aranda is really trying to build a staff that I think they felt like they probably could have done better in this class, and felt like there were some areas where they needed to improve. And obviously they lost James Blanchard to Texas Tech. Vince Ginta is moving on from the program as well. Baylor just hired Kiva Soil-Cormier to the staff as the assistant director of football operations. And so she'll come in and she will replace Vince Ginta, because she has the same title that Ginta had when he was at Baylor. So yeah, I think that she's going to take over, what is it, Baylor Associate AD for player personnel, I think is going to be her specific role at Baylor. And she did this a lot at LSU. So Dave Aranda has a relationship with her from their time there. She was a recruiting analyst in 2014 and then moved up to director of football operations, assistant director of operations. You know, she's basically a master organizer, you know what I mean, for everything that goes into recruiting, which is extremely important, whether it's events, travel schedules, official visits, unofficial visits. Like, she's going to be in charge of all of that. So that's part of the reshaking. And then they're going to have to add recruiting analysts as well to the fold, because they have to kind of shift what they're trying to do and really make it more focused and geared towards recruiting players. You know, they have to be able to go out and compete against every single school in the country and, of course, in the Big 12. So yeah, that's kind of what I mean on it. They have some areas where they have to address some more hires and also just kind of get everything solidified and make everyone feel comfortable. And when you have a junior day coming up in less than a month, you know, you got to be quick in that.
So we got some shakeup going on as far as that, as Randy just kind of molds the program more to what he wants and likes and needs and all of that. Hopefully his hires this time around are as good as the ones last year, because all those worked out pretty well. And I would think at Junior Day it'll be nice that, you know, Tech can talk about the new, everything's new and exciting and fresh and unproven, and Texas can talk about, you know, whatever they hype up every offseason of, like, this is the year, and OU can hype up that, you know, they're still relevant before they move to the SEC and completely turn into South Carolina and, you know, so on and so forth. And Baylor can sit there with a brand new Big 12 championship trophy and a Sugar Bowl trophy. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. I would think that that would probably, you know, look pretty good on their end, that they've actually got some results to back up all the talking. And, yeah. And look, they at one point, like a year ago and 2 years ago, had to be the team doing the talking too and didn't have a lot to back it up. But now they've actually got results. And I think that that matters. That's my point, is they're not just selling hope now. They can actually sell, you know, some proof in the pudding. And this time around, don't have to worry about, hey, we're at this point where we can succeed in this area. Oh, wait, our coach is now leaving. You know, like that's a little bit different this time around as well. So I'm glad they could flip the script on the trip to New Orleans versus the last time that they went in so many different ways. But there you have it. I mean, players deciding to stay, Cole Maxwell and Isaac Power and Grant Miller and Chidi Ogbonnaya and Connor Galvin and Khalil Keith and Jacob Gall, and it looks like Christian Morgan as well. And then on their way out, Abram Smith, Tristan Ebner, Xavier Newman-Johnson, JT Woods, Kalen Barnes, Jalen Petrie, Tyquan Thornton. Those are some all bangers right there. And not to mention R.J. Sneed's in the transfer portal.
Ashton Logan announced he's leaving.
Ashton, today, oh, yeah, that was officially. I saw that this morning. Yeah, okay. Ashton Logan also out as well. Is he going to the transfer portal?
It was a Baylor graphic, so it seemed like he might be done with it.
I could see him just being done with football at this point.
Because they didn't do that for RJ, so I would assume that.
Yeah, and RJ made it known he's going to the transfer portal. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Ashton's just done playing at this point. I don't know. But, yeah, add Ashton Logan to that as well. As far as players that will be not be coming back, the young man from Temple High School was a rule commit at one point in time and was a big get at the time to just – I mean, anybody was a big kid at that time, but it was good to have a guy who was, you know, close by and also had a big year at Temple at that time period. But those guys are on their way out. We'll see on RJ Sneed. He's not a big social media guy, at least not a big Twitter guy, and I'm not a big the rest of social media guy. So if he posts his new commit to TikTok, I won't see it. But you can all fill me in on that. But I haven't seen much activity in terms of just like posting offers or anything along those
lines.
Some
guys don't. In the portal, they don't post offers, and then some guys post every single offer they get. So maybe RJ's just being quiet about it. I'm sure he's going to be wanted.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will want him, but point being, like, we just have no idea. Yeah. And, you know, doesn't really matter. Wish him the best of luck, though. He's a great Baylor player for the last handful of years. Definitely. So hope he lands in a good spot for him. And that's about it for football right now. Not to tell, man, that's a lot. It's like almost an hour of news on just the roster and commitments and things like that. But yeah, two new commits and a junior day around the corner. And if you want more recruiting talk, then definitely sign up and become a member of the premium section. And I do want to make mention, we also got our film premiere coming up this Friday, Ode to Joy. A lot of hard work and finances and time and effort and, I mean, everything that you can give went into this project from a lot of different people. And I think everybody's excited that that's finally going to be seeing the light of day. for the public, and big premiere this Friday. And I know it's going to be, you know, various opportunities to see it and whatnot. But you can check out the website for more information on that. And speaking of the Baylor men and Ode to Joy, which will, you know, highlight this team's past and their championship run last season. And you'll see so many former players interviewed and all of that, including, you know, Scott Drew will be featured throughout, and just a who's who of Baylor basketball over the last few years will be a part of that documentary, three-part documentary. But for the current team, they are the number one team in the country. They are unbeaten. They've got some injury news with Jeremy Sohan, who's got an ankle that's messing with him right now, and his status remains to be seen. The good news is it's not like a, you know, there wasn't a season-ending injury announcement or anything like that, but it was a scare when he went down the other night. And they're going to need all hands on deck, because the schedule's starting to get really real now at this point, as later on tonight, the undefeated Baylor men will be taking on Texas Tech. And Texas Tech is coming off of a big win over Kansas. Yeah. Kansas over the weekend. It was who beat Texas? Oklahoma State beat Texas.
Shock. Yeah. Very surprising.
But Texas Tech coming off of the even bigger win over Kansas, which was absolutely massive for them. And, you know, it's a new era for them with Chris Beard going down to Austin, and what Mark Adams taking over, the defensive guru behind the scenes. Kind of the mad scientist or whatever, who's been given a lot of credit for the success that they've had over the years. He has done a pretty good job. Tech just kind of going about their business. And tonight it will be Baylor and Texas Tech in a huge Big 12 matchup. So, Grayson, your thoughts on the Red Raiders and the Bears?
Yeah, this is going to be a really, really big matchup for Baylor, especially playing without Jeremy Sochan for the first time this season. I know he missed basically the entire second half of the TCU game. Baylor struggled in that game against TCU for stretches. Now, they were able to pull away thanks to James Akinjo and Adam Flagler and LJ Cryer. The shooting just continued to propel them to the win. But in this matchup against Tech, Tech is very physical still, and they play really physical defense, and they're going to really try to get after these Baylor guards and force turnovers and try to create mismatches. The Big 12, this is such a big game because Baylor's currently 3-0. Every team in the Big 12 has a loss except for Baylor at this point in the season, a conference loss. So the Bears are just trying to build on the lead that they already have. Tech currently 1-1. They're 11-3 on the season. I mean, they're having a really good year, and I think people are surprised by that since they lost Chris Beard, but it's clear that they have a culture established, and Mark Adams has done a great job, and he was their defensive mind anyways, and they've continued to play great defense. Their loss was at Iowa State, really tough place to play, and then they beat Kansas. So they're off to a good start in conference play, but now they got to travel to Waco to take on Baylor. I think Baylor's going to win this game, but I do think it will kind of be a rock fight to start the game. I think it's going to be very low scoring. I think both teams will struggle to score at times, but I think Baylor's guards are just going to be a little bit too much for Tech on the offensive side.
Yeah, this would be a huge win for this basketball team. It's in Waco at the Farrell Center, so you hope that home court comes into play, and I'm sure there will be a lot of people in the stands and yelling and getting excited for this one later on tonight.
Well, hopefully, because at TCU, I think it took them, what, like 30 minutes to finally shoot their first free throw of the game or something just crazy like that. So hopefully the calls come back down to earth when these Baylor guards, especially Akinjo, are driving to the rim. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Tech plays really hard. Tech doesn't have a ton of talent, but they have a ton of guys that have bought into that culture and play really hard. And of course, Terrence Shannon is their best player, but they have some other guys that are really good. I like their roster, and our very own Ashley Hodge actually felt like they were going to be the third best team in the Big 12 coming into the season. I thought they were going to finish more like fifth, and I do think they're going to finish somewhere in there. They're a talented team.
Yes, they are. And you know, this is one that this win streak's been active and alive for a while now, and you know, this is one of those teams that can threaten that in a major way, no matter where they're playing it. But hopefully, like I said, home court comes into play tonight for the Bears, and they can keep this win streak going. And get a win over Tech would be pretty massive this early in the Big 12 conference schedule. So that's what's up next and in store for the Baylor men's team, and then they'll turn around and have back-to-back home contest in Big 12 play as they'll face Oklahoma State this Saturday. Oklahoma State fresh off that win over Texas this past weekend. So, yep, number 19 Red Raiders tonight at 6, and then 4 p.m. tip-off on Saturday at the Farrell Center for the Oklahoma State Cowboys, and then they'll have to go hit the road for all of next week with West Virginia and Oklahoma coming up. So big time basketball season is underway now. I mean, it's all basketball from here on out as far as meaningful games and the build up to the tournament. Meanwhile, for the Baylor women, we know that they've been out of action for a while now. They've had the COVID issues that have been going on, and so have we on Sikkim 365 Radio. So have a lot of people who were probably in New Orleans and a lot of people who have been traveling here lately. It's almost unavoidable if you leave the house, but they've had, you know, the Texas game got postponed. Before that, it was the TCU game got postponed. And now they're finally set to return on Wednesday night against Oklahoma up in Norman. So it'll be good to see Nikki Collin and the Baylor women get back 10-3 on the year, still in the top 25. Obviously, lost their last contest right before the COVID break. And I feel like she's, you know, I keep saying it every week, but just shorthanded for sure, and still trying to find their way. But just kind of reminds me of Aranda's first season, not entirely, but just as far as like you get dealt the COVID hand real early, you're shorthanded a little bit. And the only difference is that she's replacing much bigger shoes than he was replacing with Matt Rhule. But he did pick up, you know, where they left off with some success. So hopefully that turnaround eventually comes from Nikki Collin as well. But at this point, just need to get the Baylor women healthy and get them back on the court.
Yeah, and I mean, that loss to Kansas State at the time looked bad, but Kansas State's gone on to beat both Oklahoma State and West Virginia on the road by double digits since beating Baylor. So that's a good Kansas State team. But Baylor needs to find a way to get some wins. They still don't have a win in conference play. They're only 0-1, but they've had this time off, and they need to get into the win column. And traveling to Oklahoma, a solid Oklahoma team, is not going to be easy. But I think it's a game that Nikki really needs to get these girls ready and get them ready to go out and try to win this game. It's a big one for them in the conference standings picture. You got to steal some road games if you want to win the conference again, and I know that's their ultimate goal.
Yes, it is. So good to see the Baylor women will be getting back into the full swing of things, and just hope health is with them the rest of the way. Yeah. So there's some headlines and some news and notes. You want to get in the mailbag now?
Let's do it.
All right. Alpha Needle, how are the penalties from the NCAA affecting recruiting in 2022?
Zero. Zero impact on 2022 recruiting.
I don't even know what the penalties were at this point. I forgot.
The penalties will somewhat impact 2023, but the only thing it's going to impact is how early they do official visits and how many players get to go on official visits, you know, in the spring. It really only affects the spring because that's when their number of official visits are limited, but zero impact on 2022. They're pretty much tapped out in 2022. They have like maybe one or two spots open. Kamari Terrell, the cornerback out of Clean Shoemaker, is really the only guy that they're targeting to close out the class because they're looking to the transfer portal.
Yankee Bear with 223 safeties verbally committed. What early rankings do you give each? Who has the potential to play earlier and which has the higher ceiling? Can you give a current former player comparison for both?
Interesting. Okay, so as far as early rankings, I think I have Tyler Turner as like an 87 or an 88 on the Sikkim 365 rankings. I have to update those. I think he's probably going to be around that 88, maybe closer to 89. I just think he's fantastic and the production has been there. I think Corey is a little bit below that. I think he'll be at like an 87 or an 88. He'll be a little bit lower in my rankings just from a production standpoint. Tyler Turner forces turnovers, and guys, that is a translatable skill. That's something JT Woods did in high school. That's something Jalen Petrie did in high school. Like, that translates when you're able to be around the ball a ton and create turnovers. So that's why I really like Turner. I think Turner has the potential to play earlier as well, and I also think he has the higher ceiling. That's just my take on it. I like Corey a lot, but I just think Turner is a little bit better of a prospect. As far as player comparisons, I mean, that's really tough because I think Corey reminds me the most of a Jalen Petrie, and he's going to play that same position, so I guess I would go with him. but it's so hard to give exact comparisons for guys when you're only, you know, using Baylor to do it with. I guess for Tyler, Tyler's a really tough one because he hits kind of like a Chris Miller. Like, his ability to tackle is much like Chris Miller, but he's a much different player as far as his overall skill set. So what if you gave me like a Chris Miller and a JT Woods, kind of somewhere in between those two? I think he's somewhere in there.
All right. Let's see here. Also by Yankee Bear, how will the 23 evaluation recruiting cycle look different with James Blanchard gone? I'm not calling him by his initials anymore. James Blanchard gone and most likely a recruiting resource boost. There's a lot of initials here, so I'm trying to... So how will the 2023 evaluation recruiting cycle look different with James Blanchard gone and most likely a recruiting resource boost that Mac Rhodes gave Dave Aranda as part of his revised contract? I don't know that he did that, but I would assume there was some boost in a lot of different areas. And I'm not going to call him JKB anymore because he's part of the enemy. So he doesn't get the initials treatment. James Blanchard, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think a priority when James was here was to be the first to offer. That was always something he really believed in. This staff does not so much believe in that. I think they're more about making sure that a guy's deserving of an offer, going through a vast and extensive evaluation process before putting out offers. So I guess that's an area that they're going to differ. Overall, I think this is going to be a better class than the 2022 one was. And it's not to say that they didn't do a good job recruiting in the last class, but they didn't have a 12-win season to work with. You know, they didn't have a Sugar Bowl victory to work with and a season like they're probably going to have next year where they're really good again. So, yeah, I think those are the ways that it's going to be different. I think Aranda is going to make this process much more organized. I think they're going to probably have more people who do a ton of recruiting. So, like, when you looked at the previous staff, it was pretty much Nance and James with, you know, some Aaron Hunt in there. But I think the process is going to be divvied out a little bit more. I think there's probably going to be four or five guys that you go, oh, he's really recruiting guys hard. He's building great relationships with them. I just think there might be a shift in that kind of mindset.
Yeah, and to be clear, I wish James the best of luck, but just the nickname, even though it's just his initials, I don't know. I have a hard time with that. I have a hard time with him being at Texas Tech now and still being buddy-buddy with JKB. No, I'm just kidding. He's a good dude and a great recruiter, and I'm interested to see what he does. But, I'm looking forward to seeing kind of how Aranda sort of reorganizes the cabinet, so to speak, as far as recruiting goes.
Yeah, and it seems like that was an emphasis. So it's clearly something that he feels like they needed to get better at and improve at. So I'm very curious, too. And honestly, you know, the answers I gave you is a lot of my opinions. I think I need to see what it looks like because I don't know a lot of the people that they're going to be bringing in to try to help them supplement this class.
Yeah, that was the one thing, is that there was a lot of familiarity there because of how long he had been on the boards. I mean, the last 4 or 5 years up until, I guess, going to Lubbock, and just his interactions, a lot of people felt like they got to know him and almost like personally, as opposed to your typical coach who's not on the message boards, at least that you see or what have you, or is providing the insight that he did at times before joining the staff ultimately. But yeah, good luck to him, and I think they'll be just fine ultimately. It's like when a strength coach leaves sometimes and you're like, oh my gosh, no one's gonna replace Kaz, and then I don't know, Jeremy Scott's pretty good. Vic Valori is pretty good. You know, like there's other good strength coaches, and it's just kind of, you know, just depends on the fit and everything else. But Yankee Bear also, can we expect more of the awesome same, or do you two have any tricks up your sleeves for the 2023 version of the Bearcast? Thanks for your continued efforts and Happy New Year. Well, Happy New Year to you as well, Yankee Bear. You're a very loyal listener and question asker each week. And I don't know about 2023, but for 2022... I'm just hoping to get into a groove and get out of this just weird start to the year between the return from New Orleans and then the COVID stuff going on, and just it kind of feels like it's been sort of hair on fire these first you know, 10 days or so of January, but starting to get back into a bit of a swing of things. But yeah, who knows? We might have plenty of surprises in store.
Yeah, Yankee Bear's like me. He looks at the year and goes off of recruiting.
Yeah, I was
staring
gonna say,
at recruiting so much. Yeah, 2023 class. It must be 2023 right now. But yeah, we'll have some fun things. Typically, we do some different stuff in the off season just to try to mix it up, whether it's superlatives or just different things, maybe breakout players. We'll do some way too early predictions just to fill in when we don't get as much news. So yeah, we'll do some different stuff like we do every year. But yeah, happy new year to you too, Yankee Bear.
Scotty B, the Baylor King, do you think Baylor football needs to address punter as a position of need, potentially like class of 2024?
Like class of 2024 punter. I mean, they're going to have Isaac Power back this year,
so I guess ultimately, yeah, I mean, they're gonna have to find a punter at some point.
In
so
2023 probably is when they would, because Power will graduate after this year and be done. So yeah, I would think 2023 they might address the punter position, but honestly I think they might look at walk-ons. I mean, they've had a lot of success with walk-ons at punter and kicker, but then they've also hit on some guys they've recruited. When you look at guys like Drew Galitz and Noah Rauschenberg, guys that they recruited out of high school, so yeah, I would say 2023 they might look at the punter position, maybe try to get an overall place kicker who can kick and punt, but yeah, punter is going to be the more specific one since they have Isaiah Hankins.
With some of the spring sports starting back up this week, what's your prediction on the top two or three spring sports teams in terms of achievement level?
Oh, well, Baylor men's basketball, I think, is definitely going to be the top achiever, I think, in the spring. Outside of that, I'm trying to think. I think men's tennis will be the second one. So I think those two will be the top achievers. And I think it's going to be very close to see who goes further. I'd actually put my money on tennis going further than the men's basketball team. I think they're going to get right back to the Final Four.
I'll take A&T.
Yeah.
A&T is a good track
record.
Oh, yeah,
it is a spring sport. Yeah, okay. They're number one because they're going to be in the championship for sure.
Yeah, most likely. But yeah, there is a lot to like about spring sports rolling on around. And men's basketball is obviously going to get a lot of attention, and rightfully so, as they look to defend their crown. It'll be interesting to see how the women finish as well once they can finally get all their health back. But yeah, A&T will be starting up in less than a month. You got to put them right up there. And yeah, tennis, men's tennis, and basketball on the men's side, I think, are three pretty good and pretty safe bets as well. Let's see. Stat boy, is there a true freshman y'all think could play a major role next season? What player will have a breakout season?
Yeah, so I think as far as a true freshman goes, it's going to have a lot to do with how they address positions in the transfer portal and what kind of players they bring in. My initial thought is Jordan Neighbors. I just think he fits so well with what they're trying to do on the offensive side. He can play multiple positions, which gives him the versatility that a lot of other guys don't necessarily have. I mean, he could literally play Tyquan's, RJ's, or Drew Estrada's position in this offense. And I think that's what makes him such a unique weapon. And it also makes it more likely that he plays as a true freshman, whereas Winfield really has to play either the Tyquan position or the RJ Sneed position, probably more likely the RJ spot. So yeah, I'll go with Neighbors. They need some help at wide receiver. I think he's a very polished receiver who can do a lot of things if you just get the ball in his hands, and that makes him a very interesting weapon for the offense, I think.
Let's see here. C. Mitness, where does Baylor Athletics rank currently in the country with on-field court results? Pretty high. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to take a look at the Sears Cup or whatever, the Learfield Cup, whatever they call it. That thing doesn't really bode well for teams that don't play all of the, you know, Stanford sports, basically. It really leans in that, you know, that that type of school's favor a lot more than it does just somebody who's good at, like, the main sports. But, yeah, I mean, Alabama's having a pretty good sports calendar year, I guess, and I don't know. I'd have to kind of look around at all the different polls, but Baylor's very high up there, if not, you know, 1A, 1B almost, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've had a lot of success, and so, yeah, I think they're probably very high up there. And I did want to answer, Statboy had one more question with what player will have a breakout season. So breakout is such an interesting term because it's like, okay, so does Gabe Hall count as a breakout year this year? I guess, but I think he could go even to a higher level. But I'm going to go with one that I just, for some reason, I get the feeling that it's going to happen. If this guy can get healthy, I really think he could do some great things in this offense in the Tyquan Thornton role. And I keep saying, I thought it was going to happen this year, but he just couldn't get healthy. I think Jalen Ellis is going to have a very, very good year for this offense and finally break out and show everyone what he could do, because he was playing so well in the spring before he got banged up and was basically hurt the entire year.
Yeah, I'm not really in that mode of thinking just yet. So, I mean, Jalen Ellis seems like a good candidate. Ask me closer to spring ball, and I'll have a better answer for you. But I'm not even in that mode of thinking just yet.
Well, and it's so important to figure out who the transfers are as well, because
exactly.
We could both sit here and say, okay, well, Tay McWilliams.
Oh, he's gone. He's in the transfer portal.
Well, we're like, okay, Jordan Jenkins, oh, he's there. He's the only one that's running the ball. I mean, he's going to have a breakout year. But if they add in a running back, then it's like, I don't know if he's going to have a breakout year, because now he's sharing carries. It's just, it all depends on how many guys they add, what positions they bring these guys in. So I'm going to go with the spot that I think will stay somewhat open, and I go with Jalen Ellis again for the second year in a row.
Yeah, and he's not on the transfer portal. I'm just saying, like, guys that are here could very well be in there in like 2 months. So it's like, let me see what the roster looks like, around spring ball and then after spring ball, and I'll have a better answer for you by then. So where are we now here?
We have one more question from C. Mintness.
What storyline is most intriguing heading into offseason spring ball?
Can't believe I'm going to do this again. But I'm going to do this again. The quarterback position.
Okay.
It has to be, right? I mean, because the last time we saw Gary play, he did not play well. And the last time we saw Blake Shapen play, he looked like the best quarterback on Baylor's roster. And so I think there's going to be a competition. I'm very excited to see it. I'm excited to see how they push each other and see how much better they get. We saw Gary get so much better from spring last year, and then he just pushed everyone into the fall and ended up winning the job after spring ball, basically. And he carried that momentum in the fall. So I'm very curious to see who pushes each other. And also, I mean, the health of Blake Shapen is another thing that I think we also have to pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, there's like three questions that all address the same thing, basically. So I'm going to read all of them. So you had, what storyline's the most intriguing heading into offseason? Then Bruin asked, what's your prediction on what happens with the quarterback position in the offseason? For us to take the next step, we will have to see more consistency from that role. And then DC asked, Blake Shapen status? Got one poster who says he's had surgery and faces 8 to 9 month recovery. Another poster says that first guy is full of it. So this all pretty much has the same thing to do with the same thing, which is Blake Shapen in the quarterback spot and his health and what that looks like.
Yeah, I don't believe he had surgery. I don't believe
I haven't heard anything, but I'm also not digging around either right now. So
from what I can tell, I do not think he had surgery. So, I mean, that's something to obviously pay attention to. If he did, that's a much longer recovery, but I don't believe he did at this moment. My prediction, I think if they're both healthy,
Blake Shapen's the starting quarterback if they're both healthy, in my opinion.
I know, but it's like,
I'm not even going to hesitate to say that. He's a better quarterback based on what we've seen. And look, Gary, love the work ethic and all that, but I mean, he's going to have to improve immensely to be a sturdier quarterback next year. I mean, you know, either too soft or too hard. You know, you got to find that middle ground. And at this point, asking a guy to find touch on the passing game in the passing game, just like, man, that should have been done a long time ago.
Well, you're either accurate or you're not.
Right. And you know, you saw, like, there was a prime example in that bowl game of, like, he was clearly just like too scared to throw it almost. And then finally, I think he got yelled at because he threw that interception in the end zone that was too soft. And then
he had Tyquan.
Yeah, he had a touchdown right there. And he just threw it too soft. And, you know, the guy also made a play or whatever. But I want to say it was like right after that, he comes back out. And then he just like zips it and it's too hard. And it's like, okay, needed more on it, but not that much. You know, it's like, and that's. I don't know. That's just a kind of an annoying thing to have to be dabbling with. Like, that should be, okay, we've got that checked off already, your touch and your accuracy. Like, let's move on to, like, decision-making. But, like, that was an issue alone.
I just don't see the feel for the position.
Right.
We saw it a lot more in the second half of the year in games where they couldn't just turn around and run the ball a ton and have great opportunities and play action. They struggled, and Gary struggled with turnovers and – yeah, and after seeing Shapen play, the games that he played, I mean, he just looked better.
And this isn't a Jacob Zeno thing either, where it's like he threw two passes and everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's amazing. And then he transfers without basically ever seeing another down. I mean, that was just because people were so fed up with Charlie Brewer, which still to this day is just a weird thing how hateful people got over that young man. But regardless, I don't look at it as being the exact same thing there. We saw a lot more. We saw him go win a Big 12 title, like play an, you know, an entire game and go win a Big 12 title.
Scored 21 points against one of the best defenses in the country.
Yeah, and probably would have put up 35 if he hadn't gotten hurt. So, I mean, we saw way more than a couple of passes from him.
Well, Andy beat K-State on the road. Yeah. He found a way to beat Tech. That was not his most shining moment, but you know, the other two performances were good.
Lose that game though, if he, you know, if it's anybody else back there, probably. I mean,
first Tech. I don't know if I'd go that far. I think Gary wins that game.
Okay,
I do. That's personal opinion, but they were kind of beat up at that point, so maybe not. Maybe
I mean, it doesn't matter, but I mean, I think it's very clear that he's a guy who has just a different feel at the quarterback spot than Gary does. Just that's my opinion. So. We'll see. I don't know what his exact status is, and that will be one of the big offseason storylines. James Taylor, what do you think has been the biggest reason why we haven't had any recent success in the transfer portal? Brother, they won a Big 12 title because of the transfer portal. I mean, all four guys they got out of there last year were contributors this year, so I assume you're talking about, like, why haven't they signed a bunch of guys from the portal, which is the only thing I think you could be meaning.
That's what he's he's meaning, the fact that they've quote-unquote missed on a couple guys in the portal right now. I think NIL plays a role in it. I think that the other part about it is Baylor is being really picky with who they take in the portal, and they only have a couple spots open for the spring. Spring starts in a week, so I do think they'll probably make an addition or two before next week, so I'm not too worried about it. I think they're probably going to take like 5 or 6, maybe 7 transfers this year, majority in the summer, but I do think they'll probably take 2 this week, maybe just 1, but I think they're going to make an addition, and they're going to be fine. Like, go look at the transfer portal. Every day, new guys keep entering the portal. I mean, today, Oklahoma's star freshman cornerback, Latrell McCutcheon, entered the portal. And I know Baylor has interest in him. It's every day there's a really good player that enters the portal. So there's no point in Baylor rushing things. They're going to get good guys. They're going to get the right fits. And if you can trust Dave Aranda on anything, it is he's going to find really good transfers, because he's done that. He did that both years. I mean, really good players. William Bradley King is in the NFL right now. I mean, he's gone out and found guys that can help them, and it's worked out pretty well.
Assuming that we don't address the wide receiver position from the portal, which I think they will, what internal candidate would need to be counted on the most?
I think it's Jalen Ellis. It's time. I mean, if you're going to have one veteran that steps up, I think he's the only one that you could probably put money on saying, like, I really think he could be that guy. Outside of that, you're counting on freshmen. I mean, you're counting on redshirt freshmen or true freshmen to fill that role. I just think if they don't take a transfer, that means they have some serious confidence in their youngsters and in Jalen Ellis, in my opinion.
Hal Presley is the only guy that gets me excited right now at this point, and we barely saw any of him, but at least he was out there consistently, not always like in big, meaningful roles or anything, but he was at least seen playing time more often than not, even if it was just special teams or something.
And all Monterey. The rest
of, oh, yeah, and Monterey Baldwin. So, yeah, I mean, those two. But outside of that, I'm you know, let me see something. I'm not talking about Jalen Ellis another year when we've already done it for 2 years for no reason. It's kind of like Squirrel Williams. And look, there's nothing personal. So if those guys are listening to the podcast, like, geez, what a D. It's like, no, I'm not. I don't mean that. It's just like, we've been talking about Jalen Ellis for a long time. Like, show me something. Like, it's enough talking now. Go walk the walk. And same thing with Squirrel. And I know Squirrel's had injury issues. Jalen's had injury issues. But, you know, all these other guys, Jackson Gleason or who else is out there in the wide receiver?
Seth Jones.
Like, yeah, like, let me see something, you know? I mean, but yeah, Monterey Baldwin obviously had a huge play in the Sugar Bowl. Hal Presley, I think the, you know, the fact that he just got here quickly and quick turnaround, he's already playing, I think is a good sign. And he was a big addition through the transfer portal.
Josh Cameron played a lot too, the walk-on out of Cedar Park.
Yeah.
He got in a lot as well. I'm curious though, like, when I watched Monterey play, it felt like the only time he was getting the football was on those sweeps. So I'm really curious if he's going to be utilized in other ways, like as a full-blown receiver. It just didn't seem like he was utilized a lot in that way. But he played a lot. He played the most of all the freshmen, had the biggest impact. So we'll see. It's going to be very interesting. I think they have to add one receiver. I just don't know how you go into the year and feel really confident in the group you have unless you think the vets are really going to really stand out and the youngsters are going to pick it up.
Yeah, so I guess you could say Jalen Ellis, you know, in that category as far as who needs to step up, because I don't think Hal Preston needs to step up. I think he just needs to keep doing what he's doing, yeah, like, and step up in a way. But I'm not, like, worried about him. I'm not worried about talking about him 2 years from now like we're talking about some of these other guys of, like, why are we talking about them again? Right. You know? So, yeah, big offseason for, like, that entire flock of wide receivers from the last 3-4 recruiting classes. Like, time to step up and fill some big shoes. Let's see. James, it's too early, but screw it. Who finishes the season as QB1, assuming no injuries, Bohannon or Chapin? Chapin.
I think it's Chapin, too.
Yeah. What does Nicky Collin need to do most to improve this basketball team?
Find more depth. They yeah. just need more
depth. For one,
depth.
That would help a lot.
Yeah, quality depth is something that this team is missing, and it really is tough because their starting lineup is really good. It's just a tough ask to make, you know, these girls play so many minutes. I mean, the men's team doesn't have to do that because they have all that luxury with depth. It really takes a toll on your team.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think that's the main thing. And, you know, outside of that, I'll leave it to the women's basketball experts out there to break down the rest of it. But I do think depth is a killer. I mean, when you got basically a 7-person rotation, I know Mulkey was shorthanded at times as well, but, you know, just the COVID break doesn't help matters, although maybe it did. Maybe it helped them rest up a little bit. I don't know. But, yeah, that's for starters. And there's a lot of work to be done, but I'm not by any means, you know, declaring a final verdict on the women's basketball program. Barrett Power 56. Who do you guys predict will be the top three offensive and top three defensive players on next year's team?
Offensively, I'll go with Connor Galvin, Jacob Gall, and I guess Tay McWilliams. But really, whoever the running back is, I think those will probably be their top three offensive players. On the defensive side, that's a little bit tougher. I mean, Apuaka Ika is going to be the top guy. He'll be probably their best defense player. Dylan Doyle has to be mentioned in that group as well. And then I'll go with Gabe Hall as the third on the defensive side.
Connor Galvin, Blake Chapin, and Ben Sims. And then on the defensive side, I'll go with Apuaka and Dylan Doyle and Al Walcott.
Yeah.
I'll go with Al Walcott.
He was my fourth.
Yeah.
He had a really good year.
Doc Crowell, what does the running back depth chart look like next year? Does it seem likely we have some transfers or players moving to another position from running back?
Ooh, okay. So I'm assuming this
I don't think there's any Abram Smiths lying around, unfortunately.
Well, this is a direct question for, I think, at Quaylen Jones.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, he's the one that I think everyone's looking at and going, man, he could play linebacker. He's got 4.49 speed, but guys, everyone's been talking about his issue is his physicality and ability to get downhill. And if you aren't physical and don't get downhill at the linebacker position, you're not going to be able to play linebacker. You know what I mean? If you can't do it at running back, it's hard to imagine he can at linebacker. But who knows? Maybe he's able to make a transition. I'm not sure that I see him moving. As far as the RB depth chart, I do think they're probably going to add a transfer. I think it makes a lot of sense to add a veteran to the room. But if they don't, then I think it's Tay McWilliams and Jordan Jenkins getting the bulk of the carries. I think it's Squirrel catching passes out of the backfield and kind of being used as a weapon. I think it's those three.
Does Richard Reese need to gain some weight or something?
175 yeah. pounds. I don't see him passing Tay or Jordan. Tay, I mean, the way Tay ran this year,
yeah.
I mean, that guy was angry at second string players for the other team. When he came in the game, it was a touchdown every time. And I just think Jordan is so talented. I just think those two would be a really nice combo.
Yeah, there's speaking of big shoes to fill, I mean, the ones Abram left, the biggest season in Baylor history for a running back. Rushing yards wise, that's pretty good stuff. So yeah, Tay McWilliams, Jordan Jenkins, you know, Squirrels, and you know, throw him in that. Yeah. I mean, love Squirrel, but just kind of throw him into that pile of guys that we, you know,
Quaylen too.
Yeah, Quaylen Jones too, Jackson Gleason. The list goes on of guys, Jalen Ellis. You know, just talk about him and talk about him. But it's like this spring's like really though, like you. All those guys I mentioned and others as well, a huge, huge spring coming up for them. If you could pick one player to receive an extra year of eligibility, who would it be?
Ooh, so I guess, I mean, they've pretty much brought everyone back, right? I mean, I guess I'd want Jalen Petrie to get an extra year. I mean,
Terrell Bernard.
Yeah, I mean, both of them could have come back if I'm correct. So I guess they did have an extra year. They just didn't take it. But if you're saying I get to pick one guy to come back, Yeah, it's either Bernard or Petrie. Oh, man, that is such a tough decision. I'll go with Petrie, but it is, I mean, it is so close between those two. They both were incredible this year.
Yeah, it'd be one of those two guys, and if not them, then probably JT Woods, yeah. You know, but somebody on defense just because their defense was so good. And, you know, eventually if you had to get down to picking an offensive guy, I mean, Abram or Tyquan would be your two guys.
Shockingly, but with the way the depth chart looks, I might pick Tyquan.
Yeah, and that's it. For real,
shocking,
though.
Which,
I mean, yeah, they don't have any proven receivers right now. They don't have guys that you know, have registered much in the stats over the last 2-3 years.
They don't have a running back that has either.
No.
But we're sitting there going, like, I feel like they might be able to supplement a running back.
They got an O-line coming back to block for whoever that is. So, yeah, I feel better about that than guys who are totally unproven at this stage. And with receiver, obviously, that's just not just catching. That's can you beat your man on a regular basis? You know, can you run routes? Can you make the tough catches? Can you, you know, do all of those things? And we don't know at all for a lot of these guys. But you feel good about, like, can this guy run through a massive hole? Yeah, he can do that, you know. Yeah. Let's see, Doc, does Shapen skip baseball again in favor of football? And do you think he eventually gives a sport up? I mean, I don't see how he's going to play baseball with a shoulder injury. Yeah. For one, so I think that decision was kind of made for him. I get the sense he gets annoyed by these questions when asked. Like, he got asked about it after the Big 12 title game, and he seemed just so disinterested in the whole topic of baseball being brought up. I think probably because he just gets asked about it a lot, but I don't know. I mean, he's definitely skipping it this spring because the only thing he can do is sit in the dugout, basically, from what you know we know of his shoulder. But yeah, eventually, if he's a starting quarterback, he's gonna have to make a decision and probably have to give up baseball, I would think.
Yeah, I would think he's probably gonna give up baseball. And also, Craig, I think we missed Bear Power 56 had a question. What's more likely, Gary improves as a passer and becomes the top quarterback in the Big 12 next year, or whoever our starting running back is next year, transfer a current player, sets a new Baylor single season rushing record?
The second part.
Golly,
I'm not trying to pile on. Yeah. I mean, but like, I'm not gonna sit here and lie just to, you know.
Yeah, 1600 yards is what they would.
Yeah,
need
but
from
dude,
running
you know
back.
The leading passer in the Big 12 next year is gonna have like 3500 yards.
But who is it?
I mean, any number. I mean, there's Quinn Ewers is gonna be at Texas, and Texas Tech's gonna have like Baron Mortons and Donovan Smith back, and. I mean, you do that, but like
Hunter Deckers.
But I mean, they're all going to be running air raids, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Graham Harrell's at West Virginia now, so they're going to bring in a transfer quarterback. They're going to run air raid. Tech's going to be running modified.
Right, but is the question the top QB in the Big 12 or have the most stats? Like, you know what I mean?
Top quarterback in the Big 12. Okay, well, I'm reading it as a stats thing.
As a stat thing.
Same thing, okay? Take out stats. The best quarterback in the Big 12? No.
Yeah. I mean,
no way.
Shapen could be.
Shapen could be.
Which is pretty... Man, that's tough. I'm
not trying to start a war here either, because I know how that the fights break out with the quarterbacks and stuff, and I'm not trying to do that. I just think it's like I'm not trying to play dumb, though. Like, it's so obvious.
Yeah, I would say I think I'm more on the side of that one is more possible than the second one. The only reason I say that is because currently, as we're sitting here right now, there's no way anyone on their roster is getting as many carries as Abram did this year, because Jordan and Tay are going to split carries. Craig is going to take away carries. Like, 1,600 yards is such a big number. Whereas being the top QB in the Big 12 does not have good quarterbacks going into next year. It's a lot of unproven guys. So if Gary comes back and they go, 11-1.
He specifically, though, says, or he or she, improves as a passer and becomes the top quarterback in the Big 12. Like, I'm looking at next year, dude. This is not going to be a run-the-football defensive league. Like, everybody, I mean, there will be some teams that are that way. But, like, K-State's bringing in freaking
Adrian Martinez.
So, like, their offense is automatically going to be, like, way faster, and they might be the same thing, but he's going to probably be running the option and crap.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to not want him to throw the football a ton because he'll throw it to the other team over and over again. But, like, that's potentially an upgrade over not – Thompson, but like anybody else that they've had in terms of just like being able to move the football on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Tech is going to be totally different. Texas is upgrading. Oklahoma is going to have the Levy offense. Like, where is
their quarterback? You know, what, the kid from UCF? Like, is he
Dylan
really
Gabriel
that good?
Versus Gary as a passer, dude? Are you serious?
I mean, yeah. I guess I'm looking at it more as like the situation. And if Baylor wins 12 games or 11 games, like, he might be the top quarterback in the Big 12. Like, well, you can make the argument.
We can go in circles about this all day.
But either way, like, I think Shapen's ceiling is higher. But according to this question, I think it's more likely that Gary could be the quote-unquote best quarterback, most valuable quarterback in the Big 12, I guess.
Fair enough. What does the running back depth chart look? Okay, we already do this.
Yeah, we're on Billy.
All right, Billy is yelling at us in all caps to close the mailbag out this week. So what's happened with the Dave Aranda contract with Baylor? Is it still ongoing, cross the T's, dot the I's, as Rhodes always comments, or is it going to happen and when?
I think it's going to happen. I just don't know when.
Yeah. I don't have any insight on that. We'll have him on the show today. We can ask him about it again. I'm frankly getting tired of asking and getting the same answer. So hopefully he's got a different answer sooner rather than later. I'm not worried about it. I don't think that, like, oh my gosh, why has it not happened? What's going on behind the scenes? I really do think it's probably more of just, you know, doing exactly what you just said, crossing T's and dotting I's. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something else that's holding it up. I have no idea. But I'm not worried about it. That's my two cents on the whole thing.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure that we're going to get a ton of information on specifics of the contract.
We're not going to get
either.
We're not going to get any sort of dollar figures or anything unless somebody sends that to somebody else.
I think that's part of what people are trying to figure out. You know, where's he getting paid compared to everyone else? But yeah, hopefully we get insight on when the contract is officially locked in for Dave Aranda. That would be nice to know.
Yeah, so I mean, I know people are. I've seen that question been thrown around a bit, and like, not trying to tease you with it. That's just what was out there and what was being talked about. And I'm surprised it's taken this long. I don't know why, but again, I'm not worried about it. And, you know, hopefully we'll hear something sooner rather than later, but I know people would just like peace of mind. And what's funny about it is even if he signs it, like, doesn't really change anything. Like, it doesn't prevent anybody from still calling him either way. But I guess just, you know, inking that just is a reaffirmation maybe of just the dedication to, you know, the program and all that. So hopefully, yes, for your sake and my sake and everybody else's sake who's wondering about that contract, that is done sooner rather than later. So thank you for the question. And Billy, hope to hear from you again. Also, thank the Doc and Bear Power and James and DC and Bruin and C Mitness and Stat Boy and Scotty and Yankee and Alpha Needle. Appreciate all of you as always for your questions in the mailbag this week. And that'll round it out. Grayson, anything before we go?
No, nothing really. I mean, it's just another really exciting week. I'm excited for the Baylor basketball game tonight. It's going to be a really entertaining one and a really big one, crucial for the Big 12 standings against Tech. And again, if you want to follow more recruiting information, there's obviously a junior day at the end of the month. And of course, the second national signing day, the first week of February. Be sure to join Sikkim365's premium site. And of course, Sikkim365 Radio. Listen in every single day, 3 to 6, tons of good content, tons of college football, tons of Baylor talk as well, on the radio side of things.
Yep. And I guess Dave Aranda, part of what might be the, you know, busy part of his schedule is he's speaking at the AFCA convention, and apparently quoting Maya Angelou. So yep, he is one of a kind, that is for sure. But I just saw that from Zach Barnett over at Football Scoop. So just a fun little note to pass along there. He's not quoting Velveteen Rabbit this time around, but instead Maya Angelou. So I'm sure we'll get some Hemingway at some point and, you know, all the classics in literature.
Typical Aranda.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So appreciate everybody who listens on a regular basis. Appreciate everybody who tunes in, whether on YouTube or just via the podcast app. If you haven't downloaded the Sikkim 365 podcast app, then by all means do so. I encourage others to do so. And certainly if you haven't signed up for the premium section with a big off season getting underway, then check that out as well. A lot of conversation, a lot of stuff like you ask, and you want to get into further, you can have, you know, those long, lengthy conversations with any number of members over the quarterback spot or Aranda's contract or any topics, really. That's fair game. So check out the premium side of Sikkim365.com and check out Sikkim365 Radio, weekdays 3 to 6. We'll be talking to Mac Rhodes, I believe, later on today for those who are listening on Tuesday afternoon. But until next time, for Grayson Grundhafer, for Armstrong and Jack, I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.